Thanks for inviting me to this nice conference. So I'm going to talk about this mathematical result about additivity for Poisson algebras. And so this is a certain technical result that has some interesting consequences to both geometry and mathematical physics that I'll try to mention. Okay, so let me begin with some introduction, how I'm thinking about classical field theories. So throughout this week, we were thinking about classical field theory as the following collection of data. We have some F space of fields, and we have S, the action functional. And classical field theory is really about critical locus of the action functional. So this is a critical locus. And what are functions on the critical locus of this action functional? You can think of this as sections. Let me just write as the co-kernel. Let's just write as a co-kernel of vector fields on the fields, going to functions on the fields via contraction with the differential of the action. So I'm just writing functions on the fields, which vanish on Diderot S equals to zero. So as we know, taking co-kernels is not a very good idea. So maybe instead of that, you're going to resolve this by some complex. And this is where derived critical locus comes in. So derived critical locus is a certain space that I'm not going to define, but it's a space whose algebra of functions is given by this complex. You look at functions, you look at vector fields, bivectors, and so on, and you just contract with the Diderot differential of the action. Okay, so this is a nice complex. This has a commutative multiplication just coming from multiplication on polar vectors. And together they form a commutative DG algebra. Now, as you know, on polar vectors, you have this Haugner bracket. So it defines for you some kind of Poisson structure here. And this becomes what's known as a P0 algebra. So I will use this notion several times later, so let me just remind you what a PN algebra is. So a PN algebra is essentially a Poisson algebra, but in the DG world. So it will have, it's a commutative DG algebra together with the Poisson bracket. Of cohomological degree 1 minus n. So if n is 0, you get Poisson bracket of cohomological degree 0, which is exactly the cohomological degree of the bracket on the critical locus or polar vectors in the strips, where you view this as a complex in degree 0, degree minus 1, degree minus 2, and so on. OK, so this is a nice example of a P0 algebra. Now, in classical field theory, in general field theory, we're also interested in locality. So instead of looking at critical locus of an action function globally, I'm going to look at this action function open set by open set. And together, I will construct some kind of factorization algebra. So there's the following definition. Due to Cannon and Owen William. So a classical field theory let's say on Rn, or it's a manifold M, is a factorization algebra on M valued in P0 algebras. These are the conditions that I'll need. Okay. So all this means is that you have some kind of Cauchy F. Unfortunately, that's the same letter as I use for fields, but let's ignore this. So you have something which is a P0 algebra for every open set in the manifold. Okay, so this is the notion of classical field theory. Today we'll concentrate on topological classical field theories. Classical field theory in this sense is going to be topological if the factorization algebra is locally constant. So if the factorization algebra underlying the classical field theory is locally constant. And local constancy means the following condition. So for every embedding of disks, U into U prime, you have an induced map on observables, so the value of this factorization algebra on U and in U prime. And you want this map to be a quasi-isomorphism. Okay. And so the goal of the talk, or the first goal of the talk, is to describe all such factorization algebras. So locally constant factorization algebras, and I'll describe them in the case that where the manifold is Rn, so the flat space. So factorization algebras on Rn valued in P0 algebras, and this just means locally constant. Okay, so the description is going to be given by the following result. So this is already a nice definition, except maybe you want to have a more hands-on description of how to construct these factorization algebras or how to classify all of them. So there's the following result, proved by Rosenblum and myself, which says that there's an equivalence between locally constant factorization algebras on Rn valued in P0 algebras and PN algebras. So this is exactly the Gaudi-Suits result. It tells you that if you look at factorization algebra on Rn and you have P0 algebras, you add the indices and you get PN algebras.
Is this some sort of a Haskell operation of a KZ in some sense? Or
yeah, So let's remark here. Let me give you an example. So let's look at the case n equals 2 b1. So you know that classical mechanics gives you examples of classical field theories. So what is classical mechanics? It's a pair of, let's say, Poisson algebra and Hamiltonian H. It gives examples of factorization algebras, so classical field theories. If you want your theory to be topological, you want the Hamiltonian to be zero. So the only data left is just the data of a Poisson algebra, which in my notation is a P1 algebra. And then this result tells you that these are all topological classical field theories in dimension one. All of them are just given by classical mechanics. Okay, so this is the first result that I'm going to explain. And then the second result is what happens when you have not just Rn, but a manifold with boundary. So I'm going to consider the case of the half space. So Rn plus just means the positive ray cross Rn minus 1. So I'm not going to consider locally constant factorization algebras on this half space, but I'm going to look at something called stratified factorization algebras. So this will be locally constant in the bulk. In the interior, and there's some local constancy on the boundary. Okay, and then the second result is the classification of these kind of classical field theories. So if you look at stratified factorization algebras on the half space, values in P0 algebras. Now they will be given by two pieces of data. So there's going to be something that describes observables in the bulk. By the theorem above, it's just going to be a PN algebra, plus something that's going to describe observables on the boundary.
Locally constant and local constancy are different, and you want one in the...
I'm just not exactly explaining what's going on in the boundary. You can look at stratified disks, and you can put the same condition. So out of this, you can extract these two pieces of data. So it's going to be locally constant in the bulk, and it's going to be locally constant on a boundary. But you want to say that the inclusion of stratified disks gives a quasi-isomorphism, so it's the same condition.
So I presume if I knew what the word constructed element, I would be able to work out your definition.
The word constructible, yeah, it's a synonym for stratified. Okay, so the claim is that this is given by algebras over a certain colored operad, and I will explain later what this P and n minus 1 algebras are. And this colored operad will be important for the geometric definition of quasi-tropic submanifolds in derived geometry that I'll again, mention later.
Before we go to one, so gravity in some sense is topological. Is it topological in your sense?
I don't want to think about gravity because it's not.
Yeah, what goes wrong in it?
Well, I don't want to think of gravity as defined on a single manifold. I think you can think about gravity in some sense, but I want to, when I talk about gravity, I want to model it by diffeomorphisms.
Yes.
And so it's not really defined on a single manifold, it's defined on a diffeomorphism class of a manifold.
So it doesn't enter this definition, so it doesn't tell.
Another answer, if you work in perturbation theory and just divide by vector fields and if it has more stuff, then it would not satisfy this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could have a solution of the Einstein equations which does not extend to a bigger.
Yes.
That would follow this.
Okay. Right. And in 3D should, right?
3D.
Okay, but just because of the analysis.
There's no,
I think it's not locally constant in the story.
So, it doesn't fit this definition, in four directions.
Right, so my first goal will be to explain how we can think about this theorem and sketch a proof. Okay, so let me begin with some preliminary results. So let's say C is a symmetric monoidal category. So first of all, I'm going to identify locally constant perturbation algebras with something more explicit. So there is a result due to Lurie, which says that locally constant perturbation algebras on Rn valued in C, so you don't have to talk about perturbation algebras valued in P0 algebras, you can talk about them being valid in any symmetric monoidal category. This category is equivalent to the category of EN algebras. So here EN is the so-called little disk operad, little n disk operad. And this gives you an explicit way of understanding such factorization algebras. Let me maybe give an example that if n is 1, E1 operad is the associative operad. So E1 algebras in C are just associative algebras.
It matters in some of these category theories with whether you have units. Do you have units?
Yes and no. You think about units and augmentations. So for this statement, there is a unit, and in what I'm going to say later, I'm also going to assume that I have an augmentation.
For Lurie's theorem?
Not for Lurie's theorem, but for something later, but I'm sure you're going to ask about that as well.
I will ask it then too.
Okay. But for this statement, it's just you look at unital.
The example I understand, the Lurie's theorem.
Okay. So for me, this is going to be the definition on the left-hand side. Okay, so this is the first result. And the second result is a version of what I mentioned about Poisson additivity. So there's a theorem due to Don and Lurie, which says that if you look at EN algebras, in EM algebras, in C, this is the same as EN plus N algebras in C. Okay, so using this first equivalence, you can think about this saying as saying that if you have a theory defined on Rn plus M, that's the right-hand side, that's the same as a theory defined on Rn, valued in theories defined on Rm. Okay, so that's one interpretation of this result. Okay, so to prove the result about Poisson additivity, I didn't need to prove anything about EN algebras. Using this additivity result, I can just prove the result on the level of E1 algebras. So it's enough to prove the following statement, that if you look at associative algebras in PN algebras, then this is the same as PN plus one algebras. Okay. Okay, so as a sanity check, let's just see, let me try to unpack what this means, and then we'll see if there's something strong, something wrong. Okay, so what does it mean to have an associative algebra in Poisson algebras? So you have a Poisson algebra. And you have an associative structure in that. That means you have a multiplication A tensor A into A, which respects the Poisson structure. Well, so by the Ekman-Hildre argument, such an operation necessarily has to be the multiplication. So I'm saying that objects here are just Poisson algebras equipped with the such that the multiplication is a map of Poisson algebras. So for instance, this implies the following. Let's take two elements in the Poisson algebra. Using this compatibility with the multiplication, you can compute the bracket of A and B. So you can insert the unit on the right on A, insert the unit on the left for B. Using the fact that this is a morphism of Poisson algebras, this is going to be the same as bracket of A with 1 and bracket of 1 with B, which is 0. Okay, so I've just shown you that this statement cannot be possibly correct because all such Poisson algebras, so all objects in here, have the trivial Poisson bracket. Well, the correct result is that if you have to view everything in terms of infinity categories, so up to homotopy, then the result is going to be correct. But I'm not going to say a lot about infinity categories. Okay, so I'm going to prove that these two categories are equivalent as symmetric bundle and infinity categories instead of just plain categories. Okay, so how am I going to do this? I'm going to give you an explicit formula for the functor between these two categories. Okay, the idea for this construction is to use Kazul duality. So we've heard about Kazul duality this week, but I'm going to use slightly different flavor of Kazul duality. So let me just list several Kazul dualities and then I'll explain what they mean. So we have the following dualities. If you have a commutative algebra, you can turn it into a Lie coalgebra. if you have a p on algebra, you can turn it into a p on coalgebra. So p on coalgebra just means you have a co-multiplication, you have a co-bracket, and they satisfy all the relations for p on algebra except they're dual. And finally, there's another class of Kozul dualities, which is between p on algebras and shifted Levi algebras. So I'll write n minus 1 shifted Levi algebras. So what does that mean? It means that so such an object, an n minus 1 shifted Levi algebra, is going to be a Lie algebra, which will also carry a Lie co-bracket, but of an interesting cohomological degree. Of degree n minus 1. OK, and it satisfies the standard relations for Levi algebras, except they're in cohomological degree. OK. Thanks. OK. Now, what do I mean by these kinds of objects being dual? So there are several ways of phrasing this, but the easiest way is to just say their homotopy categories are equivalent. So homotopy category of commutative algebras are equivalent to homotopy categories of Lie coalgebras. So what this means for me is that I can freely replace my objects by the dual objects. So instead of proving some results about Poisson algebras, I'll pass to the Kozul dual side, prove some result there, and pass it use Kozul duality to go back. So the only thing I'm going to mention is so how to go from commutative algebras to Lie coalgebras, and how to go from Poisson algebras to Levi algebras. So let's say A is a commutative algebra. Then you can form the free Lie coalgebra on A in a certain degree. And you can equip this with a certain differential, which is called the Harrison differential. So by construction, this is a Lie coalgebra. It's the free Lie coalgebra with some differential. You can apply the same construction to a Poisson algebra, literally the same formula. Then you use the multiplication to write down the differential, and you're left over with a Lie structure. Then the same formula is going to tell you that this construction is a Levi algebra. So it's an n minus 1 shifted Levi algebra. OK, so the upshot is that instead of proving some result about Poisson algebras, I'll just work with Levi algebras. Okay.
teach you like Poisson's like comm tensor Li or something, and then you just
correct. Okay, so now how to construct this equivalence? Okay, so here's the idea. So let's say A is a PN plus one algebra.
Sorry. So you just apply this to the underlying commutative algebra?
Yep.
And that determines the co-bracket.
Yep.
But the Poisson structure is what determined the shift?
So the Poisson structure, so the Li structure on A induces the Li structure on this construction. So this becomes, it also has a Li bracket. If A is, it has a Li bracket.
But here I think is n minus 2 shifted. It just seems like the shift here is coming from the co-bracket, but it seems like you produced it from the commutative algebra structure.
Let me not worry about the shifts. It's not the most important thing right now. Okay, so let's say you have a PN plus 1 algebra. Using this construction, it can turn into Li by algebra. Okay, so that's a nice first step. So the second step, given a Li algebra, I can take its universal evolving algebra. So what's a universal evolving algebra? It's a certain associative algebra. Which has a co-commutative multiplication. But now G had a Li co-bracket. And under the universal evolving algebra, you're going to have an induced Li co-bracket. And it's easy to see that this pair, Li co-bracket and co-commutative co-multiplication, together satisfy the Poisson rule. So they satisfy the Leibniz rule. So it's an associative algebra in PN co-algebras. Okay, so I've started with a PN plus one algebra. I ended with an associative algebra in PN co-algebras. And then I apply Kozlov duality again, and I get associative algebra in PN algebras. So that's how you construct this equivalence. So the claim is that this composite functor is an equivalence. Okay. All right, so that's all I want to say about the proof.
Could you have like phrased this construction a bit quicker by saying you're applying E1 Kozlov duality to the PN algebra to start with?
But you want to know that Kozlov dual has a PN co-bracket?
You're saying that's not obvious from this?
It's obvious once you have the Poisson additivity.
I see, but this construct.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, now let me mention what happens on manifolds with boundary. So here I'm going to talk about relative Poisson algebras. Okay, so I state some result about stratified factorization algebras in terms of certain colored operad. So let me explain what such algebras are. So a Pn plus 1 n algebra. It's going to be a triple. First of all, it's going to be a Pn plus 1 algebra. So this is going to be the thing that controls the bulk. B is going to be a Pn algebra. This is the thing that controls the boundary. And there's going to be an interaction between those two. So there's going to be a map from A to the center of B. So this is a certain Pn plus 1 algebra constructed out of B. Let me explain what this is. So this plus 1 center is just the algebra of polyvectors. So you look at symmetric algebra on the tangent bundle of B, you shift it by minus n. It has, again, the usual Schouten bracket. So it becomes a Pn plus 1 algebra. And the plus 1 bracket on B defines the differential. So if you like, this is the algebra of functions on the DG simplex manifold associated to a plus 1 manifold, where this is the Q structure. Okay, so in the relative case, I'm going to just mention the result in the case n equals 1. So in the case n equals 1, you can identify stratified factorization algebras on the array violating C. So fix some symmetric bundle category C, and you look at stratified factorization algebras on the array. Well, you're going to have some locally constant factorization algebra in the bulk, so it's going to define an associative algebra. You're going to have something on the boundary, so it's a vector space. Let's call it M, sorry, A. Let's just call it B. And then finally, there's going to be an action of A on B. Okay, so the way I phrased it looks exactly the same as in the case of this colored operad. And the relation is the following. So basically how you prove this classification of stratified factorization algebras on half space, you again just use the result in the case n equals 1. Let me maybe call this whole category alg sub sc1. So this is the so-called one-dimensional Swiss cheese operad. And this is the thing that controls this kind of data. OK, then I need to show the following result, that if you look at such triples, in the category of Tian algebras, then you're going to get a Tian plus 1 n algebra.
So this is like a domain conjecture for that version of the center?
Well, the link conjecture for the for this Poisson center is obvious by construction.
Okay.
This is by construction a PN plus one algebra.
Okay.
If you like, this is the Swiss cheese version of the link conjecture. Okay, and now I'm just going to say in words how this works. So here you're going to have a triple of an associative algebra in PN algebras. A PN algebra, let me call it a PN algebra D, and then an action of A on B. By the first result, associative algebras and PN algebras are the same as PN plus one algebras. This is just a PN algebra, and then you just need to work out what this action is, and the claims that this action is exactly the data of a map from A to the center. Okay. Right now you can ask, okay, so I've given you some operand that controls such classical topological field theories on manifolds with boundary. Okay, you can ask what's the meaning of this pair. And this is the last part of the talk about geometric implications of this. Okay, so so suppose you have this triple, which is a PN plus one an algebra. So given this data, map from A to the center of B, you can just forget about all higher polar vectors on B and project it to B. So you get a map from A to B, and from the relations you can see that this is a map of commutative algebras. Okay, so there's a way of forgetting this structure to just a map of commutative algebras. Now for me, commutative algebras represent maps of spaces. So get a map of spaces from spec B to spec A. Well, now you can go back. Given such a map of spaces, you can ask to lift this map of spaces, so map of commutative algebras, to endow it with a structure of PN plus one N algebra. You can ask what does it mean? Okay, so let me give a definition. So suppose you have a map of spaces then the space of n shifted coisotropic structures is just the space of lifts of this map of commutative cyclic algebras, functions on X to functions on L, to this algebra of this operand. Okay, so I've just defined for you some topological space or simplicial set or an infinity groupoid obtained from a map of spaces. They're going to ask how to compute this, and now the question can ask, how does this relate to coisotropic structures? So by construction, you have, so given such a structure, you can forget to PN plus one structure on the target. PN plus one structure on the target is what I would call the space of n shifted plus one structures. So given a coisotropic structure, given an n shifted coisotropic structure, there is a plus one structure on the target. But also you can forget to a PN structure on the source. So there's going to be an n minus one shifted plus one structure on the source. Okay. Let me just give an example in the case of classical schemes that this is a sensible definition of coisotropic structures in derived geometry. So suppose that L inside of X is just a closed subscheme. So there are, L and X are two smooth schemes. If you like, you can think about smooth manifolds. Okay, so then this space of zero shifted coisotropic structures, this infinity groupoid is going to be just a set of ordinary Poisson structures on X for which L is coisotropic in the classical sense. Okay, so then this is indeed a reasonable notion of coisotropic structures in derived geometry. Okay, next you can ask, how do you construct such shifted coisotropic structures? So we heard a lot about Lagrangians and derived Lagrangians. You can ask, well, are derived Lagrangians related to these kind of coisotropic structures? This is a non-trivial statement in this context because everything is derived and you have to work up to homotopy and it's not easy to invert the bivector anymore, even if it's non-degenerate. But the claim is that this is, you can still think about Lagrangians as examples of coisotropic structures. So the space of n-shifted Lagrangians from L to X, so X is an n-shifted symplectic space, and L in X is Lagrangian, is a subspace of coisotropic structures. And you can explicitly describe this subspace in terms of some non-degeneracy condition. So this is some kind of non-degenerate quasi-tropics. Okay, so why did I mention this? Well, you can talk about a thing called symplectic realization in the derived context using this definition. Okay, so what does this claim mean? So suppose that X is anshifted symplectic. And L in X is L in X is Lagrangian. You can think about Lagrangian in the derived sense, or you can think about Lagrangians in the classical sense. Well, I can identify this structure with quasi-tropic structure, and I can figure to an n-1 shifted Poisson structure on the source. Then you see that the source of the Lagrangian is n-1 shifted Poisson. Okay, so this is what we heard from Phil, and I think other people as well, that if you have a Lagrangian, you have a Poisson structure on the source, and Phil gave you some examples of computations. So let me formalize this in a suggested definition. So suppose that L is n-shifted Poisson. It's symplectic realization is going to be the data of an n+1 shifted Lagrangian. Which is compatible with that Poisson structure. Okay. So you start with the Poisson structure and realize this as a Lagrangian in a symplectic manifold. And in the last 5 minutes, I'm just going to give you some examples how this notion, first of all, is related to the classical notion of symplectic realization, and second, why this is a sensible notion that there are indeed interesting higher examples. So the first example will be in the case of the Poisson sigma model. So let's say X is a Poisson scheme, or maybe a Poisson manifold. Let's say it's a smooth scheme. So given a smooth scheme, you can ask, you can talk about this structure called the symplectic groupoid. So what is a symplectic groupoid? Well, it's data of a groupoid over X . There's a data of a symplectic structure on the groupoid itself, which is compatible with the groupoid structure. So it's multiplicative, which means that so there's the following equation. You have three maps from the product of G cross G to G. Let me call it P1 multiplication and P2. So the first projection, second projection, and multiplication. And then multiplicativity is the relation that you pull back along P1, you pull back along P2. That's the pullback under a multiplication map. OK, so this is the notion of a symplectic groupoid. Given the data of a symplectic groupoid, you have an induced Poisson structure on X. So there's a certain canonical way of inducing a Poisson structure on X. So far, this is just something purely classical. To relate it to these notions of symplectic realization that I was talking about just now, you can observe the following. The data of a symplectic groupoid over X is equivalent to the following data. It's equivalent to the data of a one-shifted Lagrangian. From X to X mod G. So here X mod G is one-shifted symplectic. And X in X mod G is Lagrangian. Okay, so by the procedure I just mentioned, given a Lagrangian, given a one-shifted Lagrangian, you get a zero-shifted Poisson structure on X. And this is exactly the Poisson structure you get from the symplectic groupoid. Okay, so now what is the physical interpretation of this Lagrangian? X mod G is one-shifted symplectic, so it defines by the KZ formalism a two-dimensional topological field theory. This 2D topological field theory is what we've heard about recently. This is the Poisson sigma model. Okay, so this is the data of X mod G. Next, you have a Lagrangian in X mod G, which is X. This Lagrangian is going to give you a boundary condition in the Poisson sigma model. So for instance, you can look at disks, or you can look at open Riemann surfaces where the boundary is labeled by this Lagrangian. And so an interpretation of this result just tells you that if you look at the boundary of the Poisson sigma model and you look at the induced Poisson structure in the field theory on the boundary, so you look at the Poisson structure on X, you get the canonical Poisson structure from the symplectic groupoid. So in other words, on the boundary, you see just classical mechanics into X.
So the version of Poisson sigma model that we learned from
the
didn't require a choice of symplectic groupoid.
Well,
this
is kind of a more global point of view. So you can look at the completion of this. Maybe, let me mention this. So the completion of X mod G along X. You can identify this with one shifted cotangent bundle of X twisted by the Poisson structure, which is the target in the usual KZ sigma model. This is kind of more not perturbative in a sense. Okay. Okay, and the second example is in the case of transcendence theory.
You see in this formalism that, well, there should be some correspondence between Lagrangian structures and cosotropics and manifold X in some sense. Do you
cover this
in general? Or
yeah, so the claim is that cosotropics, let's call them C, actually let's just call them L in X. Well, the way you would say this is they're given by Lagrangian subgroupoids. The way I would say this is that you look at the following correspondence. So you have X, you have L, then you have L modulo its Lagrangian groupoid. This is Lagrangian. L maps to its quotient, L maps to X, so it maps to the intersection. So you have an induced map in the intersection, and that map is Lagrangian. So the claim is that such data, such Lagrangian correspondences, are exactly the data of a cosotropic. In general, it's a little bit more general if you just look at just arbitrary Lagrangians in target. Okay. Yes, so you can also, given a cosotropic, you can talk about boundary conditions given by this Lagrangian. So that's another way of boundary conditions. Okay, so the second example I want to give is the transcendence theory. So it's a split transcendence theory. Okay, so suppose D is some group whose Lie algebra is equipped with some pairing. So it's going to be symmetric bilinear pairing on the Lie algebra of D, which is non-degenerate. So as you well know, this is exactly the kind of data you want to feed into the transcendence theory for D. And let me moreover assume that there's a subgroup G such that on the level of Lie algebras, this embedding is Lagrangian. Okay, so such data is known as a Monian pair. And given the Monian pair, there's an induced structure on G. G becomes what's known as a quasi-Lie algebra. The Lie algebra G, and the group G becomes a quasi-Poisson group. Okay, so let's try to interpret this result in the shifted context. Okay, so the data of this pairing is exactly the data of a two-shifted symplectic structure on the cross-bank stack. So recall that this is just point mod D. And then the fact that G in D is Lagrangian corresponds to the fact that BG in BD is Lagrangian in the shifted sense. Okay. Now this is a two-shifted Lagrangian, so by the formalism, BG becomes one-shifted Poisson. And it's not difficult to compute this one-shifted Poisson structure on BG. If you identify one-shifted Poisson structures on BG with quasi-Poisson structures on G, and what you see after this computation is that this quasi-Poisson structure is exactly the same as the one obtained from the Meinl pair. Okay, so let me summarize what happened here. So BD is two-shifted symplectic, so it defines transcendence theory via the KZ formalism. And then the fact that BG is Lagrangian, that G is Lagrangian in D, the fact that BG in BD is Lagrangian, defines for you a boundary condition in the split transcendence theory. So it defines a topological boundary condition. And what this result tells you is that on the boundary, you have certain degenerate theory, which is kind of higher classical mechanics into BG, where BG is one-shifted Poisson, while the usual classical mechanics would be into something ordinary Poisson. Okay, so I just want to illustrate how this formalism gives you very concrete and classical results. Okay, let me stop here.
Questions for
Pavel?
Do you want to answer my question
before,
maybe?
What was your question?
So, I think, if I wasn't mistaken, you defined an n minus 2 shifted or an n shifted algebra. It seemed like the shift was kind of coming from the wrong structure, but probably.
Well, you can shift the overall. So, and I'm going to write something like this. I don't remember whether it's n minus 2 or 2 minus n. This is going to have a Lie bracket of, it's going to have an unshifted Lie bracket. There's probably 2 minus n. And
so
in
your definition of shifted Lie bi algebra, the thing that's shifted is the co-bracket.
Yeah, but you can if you have a complex, you can shift it any way you want. So you can shift co-bracket to be a cohomological degree 0, but the Lie bracket becomes cohomological degree 0.
At the cost of, I see. So that's all. Yeah, thanks.
So in your kind of additivity or sort of AKC theorem, God-given framing on Rn, but the AKC, classical AKC, actually only depends on an orientation. Can you see that from this world?
It's an interesting question. I don't know what the, so what this theorem implies is that there is some On action on Poisson algebras. I know what the O1 action is. The O1 action is just flipping the Poisson structure.
The
SN action conjecturally is trivial. I don't know where it is.
Could you
couldn't easily formally apply these results in some kind of like multi-categories or the kind of more algebra geometric analog? Like, can you imagine
what
I have in mind?
What sort of
like,
things
could
in mind?
You, you know, like what Phil and I were trying to do is basically just some kind of version of this in some differential geometric context,
yep,
or with some kind of differential operators, or all of these are some polydifferential operators, and I'm,
yep,
just wondering if you, in your setting, like you can just kind of easily infer these results maybe by just making sense of them in some kind of appropriate, you know, kind of like compound tensor category or something like this.
Not really. The result about Poisson algebras is indeed general, makes sense for quite general DG categories. The setting of Lagrangians and shapeless symplectic structures is currently only available for algebraic stacks or something like that, not for any kind of other kind of geometric context you have in mind.
So just to remind everybody, I encourage you to come to the Proto-Arts Institute Club Night, which is starting, I don't know whenever it starts. If you got red tickets on the back of your name tag, is there one you exchanged for alcohol?
You should also advertise that there's better food available upstairs than downstairs.
That's right. And there's better
That's a good thing
upstairs.
To know.
I have no idea what they're put.
This is very important.
But we should thank Pablo and Becca.